This is GeoTalks, a podcast by Blue Marble Geographics. Andrea Celeste Gorgio is a drone pilot and PhD student at the University of Cádiz in Spain. Her team has been working to revolutionize the analysis of plant species distribution in salt marshes by applying high-resolution hyperspectral imaging systems onboard drones. In our conversation, she explores how the research her team is performing in Cádiz Bay can be a model for assessing the impact of climate change for other salt marshes around the world. Welcome to GeoTalks. I'm Meg Scribner.
And I'm Cynthia Miranda. This month, we're thrilled to have Andrea Celeste Gorgio.
Hello, Cynthia. Hello, Meg. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited to be here and talking with you today.
Andrea, we're super excited to have you join us. We're interested in your research on salt marshes in the Bay of Cádiz, and we would love to learn more from you today about salt marshes in general and what makes them so important.
Thanks for your interest in learning more about salt marshes and what makes them so important. It's actually the information that I needed to get when I started working in this place, because I come from a mountain area in Italy, and I've never seen a salt marsh until I landed here in Spain. So I have to gain some understanding. Salt marshes are vegetated coastal environments, and they stand in protected areas, mostly in middle to high latitudes. They represent these spaces between land and sea, presenting these smooth and gently sloping plains. These areas get flooded twice a day due to tidal action. Actually, they are intertidal ecosystems, which means that they are exposed during low tide and submerged in salty water during high tide. As you can imagine, this makes life pretty hard for the plants in the salt marsh. Indeed, they've had to develop the ability to handle high salt levels and periods of immersion in seawater. I think that all of this is what makes this environment so special and fascinating. Among the many ecosystem services that they provide, an important feature is their function as a hub for biodiversity. Think fish, birds, and other species living in the marshes. These places are breeding and feeding sites for them. Then another key aspect is that salt marshes have an impressive ability to capture and store carbon dioxide over time. In fact, they can absorb 8 times more carbon than land forests and look up this carbon in the soil for centuries. One more outstanding feature is that these marshes act as defenders of the coast. And I think that this is very important because they're the protection against erosion from waves and currents. And they are the frontline defense during storms. In particular, the plants in the marshes are responsible for reducing wave impacts and keeping the system stable. They are trapping sediments and particles, building up the marsh over time. And with all that said, we need to remark that the salt marsh is a dynamic environment. It's a constant battle between land and sea, where the marshes can quickly form new land or easily get eroded. So they need to keep a balance. They've got to keep the pace to stay above sea level.
It's kind of crazy how these salt marshes are able to protect the coast from these hazards. And I think it's amazing that the salt marshes can store carbon for such extensive periods. And I'm wondering, why is this such an important trait of salt marshes?
Well, you see, salt marshes are super good at storing this carbon for a really long time. And this is very important for fighting climate change. You know, carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas and that traps it in the Earth atmosphere and contributes to global warming. When we are able to store carbon, especially in natural places like forests, ocean, and wetlands, in this case, like salt marshes, we can help reduce the amount of this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And so we can help mitigate the effects of climate change.
Well, it sounds like the research you're performing with the University of Cádiz will be a great resource for understanding the world's coastal ecosystems. And I was thinking that the effects of climate change are present around the world, and it's clear that these ecosystems are facing major environmental challenges. What threats are salt marshes facing?
Yes, Mac, you're right. While in the past, the changes in land cover made by humans were the main concern, now, the real worries for our coastal spot are from climate change and the rising sea. And these ecosystems face significant challenges. Let me explain it to you. Climate change brings a new problem called salt marsh drowning, which happens when the sea rises faster than these marshes can handle, putting them at risk of flooding and erosion. And you know, the structures we built along the coast, well, they're not helping. They're making things worse. Indeed, when we build more city and things along the coast, it disturbs the balance of the salt marsh. And as a result, we end up losing habitats. The point is that back in the day, when the sea level went up, coastal areas, including salt marshes, moved inland. They were able to create new spots higher up, while the lower ones went underwater. But now, our buildings and barriers that we have along the coast often block this natural move, causing something called coastal squeeze. Then we have interventions with rivers and dams that alter the flow of silt and sand to the coast. They are retained during the path to the sea, making it harder for salt marshes and other coastal ecosystems to stay stable. Another problem is the pollution from farms and cities, which impacts water quality and the species living there. We know that dealing with all these issues is challenging, but it's super important if we want to keep our coastal areas healthy and strong. We cannot afford to lose more of this coastal ecosystem because it would expose more people to coastal hazards.
Well, then it's great that you guys are performing this research. So the IBIS Blue Project is an exciting initiative. It's the Intertidal Biogeomorphic Ecosystem Services focused on blue carbon storage and resilience to sea level rise in Cádiz Bay. It's a bit of a mouthful, so I was wondering if you could tell our listeners what this means.
Okay. Yes, this is a project with a very large name. It includes all the aims of this project because, well, we have intertidal biogeomorphic ecosystem, which means that we are working with all the biological and physical features that we have in an intertidal ecosystem.
Andrea, what were the specific goals for this research project?
As we mentioned before, in salt marsh ecosystems, there are specialized plants, and where they grow depends on how high or low they are in the tidal range, okay? Even a small change in elevation can mean a different plant species, and this would affect the health and equilibrium of the salt marsh. So we are creating detailed databases for things like topography, plant distribution, and vegetation productivity. This will help people who manage these ecosystems to take care of these places better. What's great about using drones is that we can fly them over and over, compare the results, and see how things change over time and space. And based on our research, we can affirm that drones can handle studying these complex places because we can get accurate geospatial information, which in general is very challenging in these environments. I'd like to share with you that the first time I saw a salt marsh from above, I was really amazed because what I saw, it looked like a complex network of veins, kind of like our body system carrying nutrients. And that's exactly what a salt marsh does. These tidal channels guide water all around, bringing nutrients to keep the whole ecosystem going. It's one of the most productive ecosystems out there, but it's in real danger from human activities and rising sea levels. So, you know, that's why I'm very happy with this research, because we can offer new ways to understand and help in a practical manner these salt marshes survive.
All this work is just so impressive, Andrea. So if I understand correctly, the data collection process was crafted to differentiate between plant species in salt marshes with a much higher level of precision. So tell me, why did your research team choose UAV hyperspectral remote sensing and Global Mapper for the processing of the data?
Well, to recap, In a salt marsh, you often see clear patterns of zonation, basically where different types of plants grow based on how much they get flooded and how salty the soil is. But to really understand how these plants are distributed, their changes over time, and their response to climate change, we still need more understanding. We firstly need to map them, but some species can look similar to each other, and field identification can be challenging. We need the help of some techniques that allow us to discriminate them and to do so across a sufficiently large area to be representative of the system. Drones are perfect for mapping and monitoring this ecosystem because they can be equipped with different sensors and detect information remotely. Flying at a lower height with respect to satellites or planes, they give us the right spatial resolution to see the details in the marsh. Then, when coupled with hyperspectral sensor, they basically allow us to identify the specific salt marshes plants based on their unique spectral shape, which is generated by their interaction with the light.
I love hearing about this technology. Can you tell our listeners a little more about hyperspectral imaging?
Absolutely. Hyperspectral imaging is a technique that captures a large number of fine spectral bandwidths, giving a continuous spectrum of the materials and enabling the identification of specific characteristics of the object. This uniquely identifies the material, and it's essentially its fingerprint. So, even though these plants can look similar to each other to our eye, the drone-based hyperspectral technology is powerful because it combines the high spatial resolution with the ability to detect differences related to the internal structure of the plant, water content, and other features that are not visible to human eyes. So with these technologies, we can recognize and map each species and its specific niche, understanding the current condition of the salt marsh and if it is suffering any change. As for Global Mapper, well, it's very useful for handling all the data we collect. We started to use it for point cloud processing, and its tools are very powerful for data analysis and visualization. Plus, it's great for handling large data sets, which is important for our work in the salt marshes because we capture a lot of data. That's why we use it to organize all the information and extract from this information useful insights.
Andrea, I am assuming that you had to fly your drone several times, which may have been a fun task for you because you're a drone pilot. So how many times did you have to fly them to collect enough data for your research?
Well, the frequency of drone flights really depends on the specific information we want to know after. If we are aiming for a glimpse of the current condition in a system, a single flight can often be sufficient. In this case, if we need to explore aspects like elevation or distribution of vegetation, we can customize the drone with a suitable sensor and fly it in accordance. But when it comes to studying the evolution of the system over time, that's when we need more flights. Imagine you are interested in detecting changes in the salt marsh throughout a representative period, maybe a full year. You have to take into account that these environments can be influenced by seasonality, so analyzing them on a seasonal basis can be necessary. With drones, it's really practical because we can strategically plan one mission per season, capturing the state of the ecosystem for each of them. In this way, we create a complete annual cycle, allowing us to analyze and understand the seasonal dynamics and how the salt marsh transforms throughout the year. And if you require more specific details for a season, you simply have to schedule flights more frequently, perhaps on a weekly basis. Another case is collecting data for a post-event characterization. For instance, after an extreme weather event, like a storm, we can fly the drone to assess the impact and observe any changes that occur. Basically, we can fly drones whenever we need. And this allows us to have this tool to study how this ecosystem can respond and recover from significant events in the case of weather, extreme weather events, and provide information that might not be easily obtainable through conventional methods.
So it's my understanding that using drones and UAVs when collecting data for salt marsh analysis has resulted in a less abrasive data collection process. Would you tell us about the differences between these data collection methods?
Yes, absolutely. I believe everyone involved in salt marsh research understands the challenges that come with conducting traditional fieldwork in these environments. Gathering in-sea measurements is particularly demanding for various reasons. Firstly, not all salt marshes are easily accessible. You have to consider tidal fluctuations because venturing into the marsh during high tide is not a good idea. Then, these areas can be vast, so they can require extensive walking to cover and sample them adequately. Moreover, the marsh substrate. Well, as you move toward the sea, it becomes progressively more and more muddy. And let me tell you that sometimes it's a bit funny. Our outfit for sampling salt marsh, it's not exactly last fashion. We use bodies and clothes that we know will inevitably end up completely covered in mud. And we absolutely need anti-mosquito. Yes, there's a lot of mosquito out there. And we use lead to maintain stability and avoid sinking into the mud. We enter the marsh looking clean, but by the end, it's a muddy experience. So, as you might guess, this is not exactly good for the marshes either. I can guarantee that wherever we step, we end up causing a bit of damage. This is where the utility of remote sensing becomes evident. Satellites are very well known, and they cover the whole planet. The sensor on board records how the Earth's surface interacts with electromagnetic radiation. And the recorded data is then processed and analyzed to create maps and obtain information about the target area. But satellites have their limitations. If it's cloudy, the area will be covered so satellites cannot see it. Then usually they are set to pass at specific times. So if you need an image on a specific day or after an event, it may not be available. And their spatial resolution, frequently it's not enough. And becomes hard to precisely identify the distribution of species because the variability of the marsh has a very fine scale. So that's where drones can change things. They fly at a lower altitude with respect to satellites and give us the flexibility to fly them when it is needed, obtaining high-resolution data.
Andrea, what did you conclude from your data analysis?
Well, Cynthia, this study applying hyperspectral imaging from drone basically tells us that this specific method can be very useful in spotting and mapping plants at the species level in the salt marsh. We found species that might look similar, even in their spectral signature. But with this technique, we can identify hidden differences related, for example, to their water content or how salty they are. We use specific spectral transformations to find these hidden features in the plant reflections, and it works pretty well. The obtained classification map had very high accuracy. We could define the elevation range for each identified species with the LiDAR technique in other work, and with this, we can have an idea of the current situation of the salt marsh. Then with consecutive monitoring, we could keep an eye on possible changes and evaluate how this area might respond to rising sea levels. In a few words, this technology can be applied to pilot areas, and the information extracted in them can be very important when it comes to understanding the distribution of species in the marsh.
What an accomplishment. Can you update us on any current efforts to preserve the salt marshes in Cadiz Bay?
Well, salt marshes here are under national and international protection figures. They are included in a natural park, the Cadiz Bay Natural Park, and in the Ramsar Convention, for example. So there are plans to manage the natural resources and the use of the area to conserve biodiversity, for example. Then there are research groups like ours actively involved in checking the health of this ecosystem through scientific research and monitoring programs. With the acquired knowledge, people managing the marshes can set up plans to tackle issues like invasive species, promote responsible land use practice to protect the ecosystem, and launch projects to restore salt marshes. And with this knowledge, authorities can make decisions about where to focus their efforts and decide how much they're willing to invest in protecting this ecosystem at risk. I'm part of this multidisciplinary project called IBES Blue, which aims to provide the information needed to understand how much our salt marsh is in trouble. The resilience of this ecosystem relies on their ability to maintain their elevation with sea level rising. And this capacity depends on the inputs of sediments, but also on the presence of vegetation to retain and fix these sediments and organic carbon. The data from my research is super important for this project because it provides knowledge to try to answer questions like whether our salt marshes are drowning or are able to survive. We are developing accurate elevation models for the intertidal area and other databases that will serve for predictive models for the evaluation of the potential fate of this ecosystem under different climate change scenarios. Cadiz Bay tends to be a model system. We are confident that the results of the IBES Blue project will provide the basis for understanding the functioning of other temperate salt marshes ecosystem in the world. Anyway, if you want to know more, they share updates about the project on various platforms like Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, and they also have their website. However, you know, scientific exploration like ours extend beyond Cadiz Bay because each region worldwide usually looks into its own local problems and study the dynamic of its marshes. But the crucial aspect lies in the exchange of ideas with other countries to improve the current knowledge and the possibility of managing and conserving this ecosystem better.
Andrea, it has been just so much fun talking to you today. If our listeners want to learn more, where can they find your work or more information on salt marshes?
Okay, you can check out my LinkedIn and ResearchGate profiles, for example. On my LinkedIn profile, you'll find a recent video presenting my investigation in 3 minutes. It was for a contest promoted by the Deputation of Cadiz and the European University of the Sea. Actually, you can find the clip on the CU channel on YouTube too. The idea was to focus the attention on the area of Cadiz, showing how important it is, and talk about the research happening there. We made the video to spread the word about how awesome salt marshes are, show off the drone monitoring we're doing, and get everyone thinking globally about taking care of our ecosystem. Anyway, you can find our research by searching on search engines like Google Scholar, or platforms that provide access to large bibliographic database of scientific publications like Web of Science or ScienceDirect. We are big fans of open access, so our results can be easily accessible to everyone without any barriers. We want that our findings are out there for everyone. And I also want to mention, I give a big, big thanks to them, to the awesome drone service of the University of Cadiz. And none of this research would be possible without them. So if you want to see all the cool equipment we use and all the projects we are part of, from research to dissemination activities, you can visit the website and check the updates on Twitter and Instagram too.
We want to thank Andrea for joining us on the podcast today and for teaching us about the work her team is doing to protect coastal salt marshes. If you want to learn more about the innovative geospatial work of other professionals, tune into next month's episode. We also want to know what you're working on. So if you enjoyed this episode and have a project that you'd like to share with us on GeoTalks, you can email marketing@bluemarblegeo.com. You can find our show notes, including any resources or data that we mentioned, in the description. If you enjoyed listening, subscribe to our podcast and turn on notifications so you don't miss any episodes.